Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's now the fourth day of air assaults in Libya by coalition forces working off that UN resolution that establishes a no-fly zone. And at this point, it's giving the opposition forces, rebel forces, a little bit of room to breathe. And that has a lot of people wondering, just like Sam Gardner, a retired Air Force colonel that we spoke to yesterday on the program. It has people wondering, who exactly are these rebel forces and what would happen were Gaddafi to leave power?
It's about tribes against tribes. Most of the leadership of the opposition forces are people from the Gaddafi regime. The Minister of the Interior playing a major role, a guy who is not a Democrat. He's a guy who has been part of the subjugation of the people of Libya from the many years. So we're involved in supporting one side in a civil war against another side. It's not democracy.
All right. If it's not democracy, then what exactly is it that we're looking forward to, perhaps as a future for Libya? We're joined now from Tripoli by New York Times reporter David Kirkpatrick. David, before we get into the profile of the rebel forces, maybe you could kind of give us an update on where this conflict stands between the opposition fighters and Gaddafi's forces.
It's a little bit of a stalemate. Last night, once again, around 8 or 9 o'clock, there was a wave of anti-aircraft fire and missile strikes around Tripoli, but it was shorter than usual. And in the east, my understanding is that the rebels have tried to regroup, my colleagues tell me, but haven't been able to push back against the Gaddafi lines. So the battlefront hasn't moved materially towards Tripoli from the east. It's basically static where it was. All the airstrikes are done to sort of hold things in place.
And how is it in Tripoli, where you are based?
Sunny and bright. Not many stores are open. We're starting to see gas lines. But, by day, if people...
Did we lose David? Yeah, I can hear you, David.
Okay, yeah, by day it's relatively peaceful. We're trying to persuade our minders here to let us out of the hotel where they're keeping all the foreign press pent up.
I see, and you've been there for a couple of days. Well, let's talk a little bit about these rebel forces, because this is a very different picture than the one we saw in Egypt. In Egypt, we were reassured over and over that the opposition forces, none of the opposition forces had any interest in establishing an Islamic Republic. That's only true of a portion of the rebel fighters in Libya, where we actually do have some people fighting against Gaddafi who are very interested in establishing an Islamic Republic.
You know what? Let me correct that. To be honest, there certainly are active Islamists in Egypt who lent their support to the cause of the revolution. And likewise, there are some here. But in both cases, it's a minority. The real leadership of the council in Benghazi is resoundingly secular. And no one who's reported from the East has told me that they've seen any kind of a major presence of Islamists. I mean, I'm sure there are some here, as there were in Egypt, but it's not a big factor. Your other guest raised an important question, which is this really at base a kind of democracy struggle or a tribal civil war? And that question is much more difficult to answer.
You know, this Islamist question, it seems to me, is a bit of a red herring. The U.S. is a big ally of Saudi Arabia, which is as close to a theocracy as anything in the region. And Pakistan constantly describes itself as an Islamic nation. So, why the U.S. would have a problem with Islam as a function of democracy is certainly a puzzle to me. But if this is a civil war, David, what does that mean for tactics on the ground, complications for actually finding an outcome here?
Well, the question is sort of who are we in bed with, so to speak? I mean, are we deploying U.S. military forces to help a democracy movement get up off its back, or are we helping one side that just wants to take a lot of blood out of the other do so? Is this one tribe against another, or is it a more moral cause that's about changing the nature of the regime instead of just who's on top?
Okay, but what we see in Benghazi, David, people are thinking of Benghazi as kind of a model for what may be the opposition movement should Gaddafi leave power. What do we see in Benghazi that gives us a clue as to how the opposition forces would function if Gaddafi's regime falls?
Well, we see leaders who are drawn from a kind of westernized professional class, professors, lawyers, doctors, civilized people that you'd like to have dinner with, and we hear them talking a lot about human rights and the rule of law. But this hasn't really been tested yet. You know, just now they're beginning to grapple with things like the question, are there Gaddafi spies among us? And we'll see how they handle that. You know, do they retaliate against those suspects with a kind of rough tribal justice, or do they bother to have trials and find out who's doing what? You know, judging by their propaganda, they're co-equal with the Gaddafi regime. Their statements about the war are just as inaccurate and sort of overly rosy as the Gaddafi regime. You know, they both insist they're winning huge victories all the time when the facts on the ground are very different.
We're talking with David Kirkpatrick, live from Tripoli, Libya, from our partner, the New York Times. David, is there any tradition of this professional elite, this educated class, actually being connected to people who might be voters in Libya in the way that that professional elite is connected to a certain extent in Egypt?
You know, it's the societies are so different. It's apples and oranges. I mean, this is a country. Egypt has a long cultural and intellectual history that it's very proud of. I mean, it is a very civilized country compared to Tripoli, compared to Libya. You know, 40 years ago when Gaddafi took power, this was a nation of sort of nomadic herders, and for most of Gaddafi's reign, it was largely cut off from the West for a long period. He had forbidden the teaching of English in the schools. But as the oil money has come in, it's become an increasingly urbanized country. It's really changed radically. 85% of the country now lives in cities. And over the last 10 years, Gaddafi has seen the wisdom of educating people abroad and promoting dialogue with the West. So now, over this more recent period, you're beginning to see a westernized elite funded by that oil money that's been to Europe and studied in European schools or American schools and brought back some of those ideas. But, you know, what kind of effect that would have on a post-Gaddafi transition, should one occur, is really an open question. I mean, optimists say, well, look, this is, you know, Libya's a different world. We can have some hopes here.
Yeah.
Pessimists say, look, this is a tribe-on-tribe conflict.
And that's the question, whether they're united now in the mission to topple Gaddafi, but how long that unification would last is anybody's guess. That's David Kirkpatrick of the New York Times speaking to us from Tripoli. We're still looking for your views on the entire war, whether or not the United States should get involved.
My name is Dorothy. I'm from Brooklyn. It's about time we just stop getting involved in wars of other countries, particularly if we don't know if the outcome is going to be democratic or a militaristic coup or a case where the Muslim Brotherhood takes over.